Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Arnold from Lighthouse and Signals. Welcome, Arnold. It's a pleasure having you here today.
Thanks for inviting me to the show, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
And I'm really looking forward to the conversations that we'll have today, especially regarding the DAOs and governance aspects and the future of on-chain economies. But before we dive into the details, like briefly, could you tell our audience like who exactly are you and what are you really working on just in a few sentences?
Yeah, for sure. So, hey everyone, my name is Arnold. I'm the founder of Lighthouse and also a new protocol called Signals. Well, we recently rebranded to be more of a research lab, but we'll get more to that later. But yeah, my history is I've been a software engineer for 15 years, typically as a CTO. You know, people hire me or had hired me to build out systems from scratch, design complex inventories, e-commerce, IoT, lots of weird Web2 things. But yeah, that's kind of where I cut my skills. And in the last 4 years, I've been dedicating my time to build specifically in the Web3 space. Yeah, I think that's like a good quick intro.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like you really have like this first like massive Web2 experience and then you transition to Web3. And like when we initially talked, I found it really fascinating, like the first, your story of how you really got into DAOs and how that there was this protocol that really got pretty much, I would say, like corrupt by its holders. And you did you used the DAO structure to do like a hostile takeover to really revive the project and
yeah,
take it from there. Like on that sense, go ahead, please.
I can expand more on that. Yeah, so when I first entered the Web3 space, it was professionally, I entered it as a consultant working for one of those big ICO projects. Now, those founders, they raised a lot of money and they had a relatively large community, 100,000 holders plus. And over the course of that build, you know, after spending my time and hiring a team and building out the product, it was announced to me that the project ran out of money. And I was like, well, hang on a second. Didn't we just like raise significant amount of money in terms of like multi-millions? And then what became known to me was that somehow the money was spent primarily because there was no accountability. And, you know, in the end, the community was left with a product that was like, well, it was hard to sort of progress any further. So, you know, at that point, I dedicated close to over a year of my time and my team's time to build out something that I strongly believe in. And again, I'm not, you know, someone who's just come in from scratch. I've got a strong history in Web2, and I know the sort of effort and that was required to actually build and deploy this product. So I was like, okay, what can we do? I felt like a real sense of affinity with the community. And at that point, you know, I've been reading about DAOs for a couple of years, and I observed how various different organizations have started to use DAOs as a means to create consensus online in a decentralized manner. So I used the DAO ideology as a means to deploy a hostile takeover where the community was able to recover funds from the ICO project and then have that transferred into a treasury multi-sig. And we also established things like a constitution, a working council. And, you know, I personally led, like, with the help of the community and, you know, various individuals, lots of really important decisions, such as like, well, a reduction in token supply. How do we manage funds? How do we make decisions? What are the intentions of the DAO moving forward? What are our values? And through that experience, that eventually led me to build, or at least have the ideas of Lighthouse, because over the course of that year, I encountered so many different challenges in regards to, as an organization, a decentralized organization, how do we communicate with our stakeholders effectively and efficiently? And many times when we were making on-chain decisions, I found it to be really slow. So say, for example, we would deploy an initiative, and we would have it open for feedback for 1 to 2 weeks. But then most people weren't actually like looking at their phones or visiting the forums or Discord and participating in a timely manner. And this is mainly, you know, during that ICO boom, people were just like running around between all sorts of different projects. But like, there was a small group of like highly incentivized individuals who were willing to sort of participate, you know, day two, day three. But we found that the supermajority would come in at around week two or three. And at that point, the decision may have already been made. And then they started having objections. And then we were like, well, I'm sorry, we had 2 weeks to have deliberation, but you weren't there. So, you know, that really highlighted to me the importance of like, well, how do we actually scale decisions efficiently? And how can we inform our participants so that they can be like, oh, I've got a call to action. I need to go and check in and maybe perhaps provide my input. And when I was investigating systems to actually get in front of our users, so in this instance, we had 100,000 holders. At that time, and even now, like the ability to contact 100,000 holders is quite tricky. So let's walk through some of the options. You can put it out on Twitter. It goes into the void, into the feed. You can put it on Telegram. You know, people are juggling literally hundreds of Telegram chats. Put it into Discord. Again, you're hoping that they will come in. They've got notifications turned on. You can airdrop an NFT. It's probably going to get marked as spam. It's also not cost effective. You know, even if you're deploying an L2, you can send a message on chain, but not everyone has the appropriate software to read an on-chain transaction. So these were all the sort of small hints that I was developing that eventually led me to build Lighthouse. But yeah, I think we'll pause at that.
That's really fascinating. But you also mentioned like with Lighthouse, you aim to get like multi-sig transactions signed in under 5 minutes. So really to get the decisions moving quite fast. I'm more curious on the aspect of like, especially since you have experience managing a DAO, a relatively large DAO, and I would assume a lot of organizations have this challenge already. Like, why hasn't there been an effective solution for this yet? Like, you're really the one that has come up with Lighthouse for a solution to really solve and get governance moving.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe let's rewind back a little bit because I don't think I've properly explained Lighthouse. So with Lighthouse, what I was doing there is I wanted to create a narrow channel so that if you are a participant in a DAO, you can easily have a sort of a normal interface similar to like Threads or Twitter where you can just follow your DAO and you know for a fact that the only messages that you will receive on that medium will be originated from project leaders themselves. So it's not about spam. It's not about just chitter chatter. And one of the other aspects of Lighthouse that we explored, I think during an ETH Global Hackathon when we first were playing with the idea, is like we also wanted to see how we can leverage Ethereum cryptography to guarantee that the authors of the message were indeed the people they claimed to be. So if we rewind back to that era, on any of those channels, Twitter or Discord, there are several cases where an account from a moderator or a team lead would have been was compromised, and that channel was used to was exploited to drop phishing links, which then led to people clicking on links and loss of funds. So one of the sort of principles when I was developing Lighthouse is like, well, how can we actually leverage the existing power we already have with Ethereum cryptography to guarantee that the people sending the messages are who they claim to be?
Truly having like also that identity verification and making sure that everything is clean practically so the DAO can work as efficient as possible.
Yeah, of course. And so, I mean, this works. We already see this deployed. So say, for example, everything in Lighthouse, in the way when we send messages out to our relevant holders, the only way you can do that is when you sign in with Ethereum. Now, the only way that can be compromised is if you lose access or your access to your private key is compromised. Similarly, we can also deploy interesting mechanisms. So say, for example, maybe if we are in a really high stakes protocol DAO, maybe we don't want that liability only mapped to one EOA. Maybe we can wrap that into a safe, or we can have something like, okay, in order for a message to be sent out to our 100,000 users or whatever, it requires at least 3 signatures from key leaders. So then we know that, you know, that message was actually sort of signed off before it's sent out massively, because this has actually like a lot of implications. So say, for example, if there's something price sensitive and that gets sort of leaked too early, or we want to create something where there's an embargo, we can actually use this using cryptography and explore these different sort of ways of disseminating information.
When it comes to Lighthouse, and I know that you also have another very exciting project, Signals, that you're working on, but before we move on to that thing, I'd love to hear, because you also have like extensive experience in Web 2 and you've worked with numerous projects in Web 3, and Lighthouse is quite of a, like when you see like the go-to market for Lighthouse and where like the target audience really for Lighthouse is very niche. So
yeah.
Really curious, like how did you navigate that aspect of like getting initial users for Lighthouse and building the company from there? Because it's definitely not your regular crypto company that the consumers would see. It's something that works in the background, and the more seamless it works, practically the less you hear about it, except the branding that you have the app and you get the updates.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So one of the sort of challenges while we were developing Lighthouse, we were talking to people about how this is actually a better delivery mechanism for people to sort of consume information. However, with user research, most people are very much stuck on a particular way of doing things. So it really was on us to sort of create new ways of interacting with the blockchain that weren't possibly done before. And the first thing that we did was, instead of trying to convince the broad spectrum of users, hey, just use our tool, we just focused on things that we can do that no one else can. So late last year, or I think it was mid last year, we won our first ecosystem grant, and that was from the Safe Foundation. And that was to deploy mobile voting with multisigs. And multisig, for anyone who's used a multisig before, they know that it's a challenge to coordinate with your other signers who may be in different geographical locations or in different time zones. And you're often playing with web interfaces that aren't necessarily optimized. So that was like a really nice chunky bit of work that we set to solve. And we're in the process of finishing that off in January. So what we set out to do is we want to say that, hey, if you are on a multisig with your governance tokens and you as an individual who wants to propose a vote, how can we deploy the best-in-class interface for you and your other signers to be aware that a multisig transaction was proposed, and also enable you to sign and execute that in the most time-efficient way possible without relying on, let's just say, like Web2 workarounds or different channels that aren't necessarily trusted. One of the cool things about having a native app means that it is a closed and somewhat trusted environment, and the sort of surface area for risk is a lot more minimized than it is interfacing with various websites and different systems.
That's fantastic. And also, like, moving from there, like when it comes to Lighthouse, I have one last question. Like, where do you see, especially as governance is evolving and a lot more focus right now is put on governance, especially in the bigger chains, where do you see governance evolving in general, and where do you see Lighthouse fitting in there in the coming, let's say, 6 months to a year, since governance is not, at least on-chain governance is nowhere as speculative as the craze that we're seeing on the front pages?
Yeah, for sure. So I think coming from a sort of systems engineering background, I don't believe that there will be one specific governance tool that will win out overall. I think as the industry matures and we have more organizations that have a lot of capital to deploy and manage more governance systems will be spun out, and each of those systems will have their own nuances for what they need, what needs to be managed, and how they want to manage it. So we're seeing lots of beautiful experiments across the ecosystem, across multiple chains. And our thesis at Lighthouse, we aren't necessarily building a, hey, we believe that these two systems are the best and everyone should be using it. We believe that over time, quite a few systems will be popping up, and we want to be able to support the different configurations. And if we just want to look at it from a sort of a user experience perspective, you as an individual, if you care about several different projects, it is going to be very likely that each of those different projects will have their own variants of governance. And the time cost to actually go in and participate in a meaningful manner is going to be quite high. And we're already quite attention poor. So one of the reasons why we think Lighthouse will succeed is that we're going to abstract away all that sort of time and effort required to interface with those systems and provide a sort of a very easy to use interface for you to stay on top and participate. So that's what we're, that's the sort of trajectory we believe that Lighthouse will be going in the next 6 months or 3 to 5 years for sure.
Fantastic. But also, like, when it comes to governance, like, you have explained it in a, like, the governance stack in general, when people usually forget 80% of the governance stack and they only think of voting, when in fact you have like ideation, discourse, voting, allocation, and accountability. So the thing over there is like also like with your new project Signals and how you're focusing on the ideation aspect and how you're solving that aspect as well. I would love to hear more about that and what really Signals is all about and why it's really important in the governance stack.
Yeah, for sure. So, thanks for referencing that. So the governance stack, so we've been researching and like observing various DAOs and communities, indexing all their data for the last, I guess, 2 years. And the governance stack was a sort of framework that we developed internally that we used to sort of classify various aspects of the governance system. So as you said, governance stack is comprised of ideation, discourse, voting, allocation, and accountability. So those five buckets are the broad categories that we sort of try and allocate different initiatives and programs into. And from that, we try and understand, well, how do they all relate to each other? Because they all inform one another. And the end goal is, regardless of what system or DAO, there will be a relationship between those five properties that will, in effect, inform how end users make decisions to allocate capital and, you know, progress the mission of the DAO. So when we were doing this evaluation, especially across EVM's systems, we found that most of the discourse was focused on just the voting systems. And the voting systems themselves like are super complex. And again, this is not like a, yeah, I'm not trying to call it, I'm not trying to paint this in a negative light. Voting is just like extremely complex, but it's really cognizant to also understand that there are other aspects that can inform that final step. And that sort of really led my team to explore, well, how can we bring more of these adjacent systems on chain? Because at the moment, so say for example with discourse or ideation, the majority of that happens in Telegram or Twitter or forums if you're a little bit more professional. But even then, if you're an individual and you're participating in even like three or four DAOs, you've got quite a few segregated profiles. So we're not even sort of capturing your participation as an individual and your contributions to each of those individual things, each of those individual organizations. So I was thinking, well, what can we do to sort of like collate all this information in a meaningful manner? So even if you have participated in a DAO and you're just following one DAO, like following one DAO is like super intense. You have to read hundreds of threads or information. It takes a lot of time and effort to sort of really, you know, be on top of the needle, right? So with that, we were thinking about, well, how can we sort of refine and synthesize all that unstructured data? And this led us to this protocol that we developed during a hackathon that was led by Arundhao and Arbitrum. And we call that product Signals. So Signals effectively, it borrows a lot from traditional sort of agile methodology. When you, if anyone who's ever developed products, there's this concept called a product prioritization board. And basically, it's a matrix of how the team weights and ranks the importance of certain features to develop. Now, if we extrapolate that to a decentralized context, we have some of the properties. So we've got a DAO, we've got a governance token that can be used to signal voting power, even if it's like not someone who's professional. And we can also create initiatives, and those initiatives can be ranked and assigned weight to. And we've also got some other pretty cool properties, such as like decays, that can, you know, when sort of composed together, can provide this really interesting primitive. So in Signals, what we do is we allow DAO community members specifically to use their governance tokens as a means to really throw their weight behind certain ideas that they feel passionate about. Now, this is actually really cool because, say, for example, if someone presents an idea in a forum or on Telegram, that kind of gets lost in the noise. Whereas in this sort of on-chain sort of product board, you can say that, hey, I really care about this idea. I'm willing to stake 10,000 of my governance tokens behind it. And over time, if many members of the community sort of also have that same idea, maybe you get support for it, your idea, maybe it doesn't. But just with that alone, we have like a ranked or an ordered list of ideas that your community feels strongly about. But we also know that in on-chain or decentralized organizations, nothing is static. Things are actually quite dynamic. So we also wanted to introduce a primitive to amplify votes for people who may not necessarily have a large allocation. And this is like very true in the majority of most token allocations. So we have founders, investors, or insiders who have a very large concentration of tokens, and they have the ability to push proposals through based on their objectives. And that's totally fine. And, you know, these are high context individuals. They're doing things and making decisions for the betterment of the DAO. But that leaves small token holders or the people in the community who believe in the idea. They don't necessarily have a voice that or a means to sort of amplify their voice. So what we wanted to do there is we introduced a locking mechanism, which means that, say, for example, if I believe in this idea, I can lock my 10,000 tokens. That's fine. But that's, again, kind of very narrow. But if I really believe in it, I can say, like, I'm going to not only lock my tokens behind this idea, I'm also going to lock it for a duration of, say, for example, 6 months. And that has an effect of a multiplier. So those initial 10,000 tokens, depending on how the board is configured, that can be amplified to 100,000. Now, if you can imagine, if lots and lots of small token holders band together behind small ideas, it becomes quite interesting because for the first time, small coalitions can develop and smaller token holders have a means to amplify their voice, which means that for the first time, they can signal their sort of intent for how they want certain activities in the DAO to play out. Now, it's important to sort of distinguish that this is not like a formal vote. This is more of a sort of a deliberation tool. So say, for example, if I put forward an idea and I gather sort of support for it and, you know, people lock their tokens for a period of time, we can also use that as, say, we can, at any given point in time, if you're an outsider coming into a new DAO or an organization, you can see the sort of like very ranked or list of initiatives that are super important to that community. And it just makes the sort of ability to navigate these new spaces a lot easier. So instead of me having to, you know, read hundreds of forum posts, I can just be like, oh, I just want to see what are the top three things that are important. Maybe I can add value there in that respect. So yeah, that's signals at a very high level.
Which in turn, like, even as you said, like having seen the top three things that are important, like that would allow a lot of people to participate in more DAOs and have more meaningful contribution without actually having to go through thousands of chats and being constantly there. So, but actually go on with their life and still be an active participant.
Yeah, for sure. Like, DAO fatigue is a real thing. I'm interested in quite a few DAOs, but I genuinely just don't have the time to go in and, you know, participate in a meaningful way without having to read everything. So I think this really unlocks people's ability to just jump in, try and really focus on things that are high, very super important, and try and get those things over the line, or at least discard them if they, you know, they don't reach consensus for whatever means. So yeah,
I'm really curious, like, when it comes to staking conviction, like really staking your tokens to prove that how much conviction you have in an idea, like so far with Signals and on the tests that you did, like what kind of real world results have you seen, or like what are you expecting to see primarily when it comes to really rolling this out to specific organizations? Because like, even if we see it from another perspective, like the ideation bucket of the governance stack has not been touched by many companies, regardless, like even though it's like a very important aspect that will impact all the other four buckets.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of how I imagine this to be rolled out, so again, this is a hackathon project, but one of the cool things is we've recently got accepted into the Uniswap Hook incubator. So there's some other things that we want to explore there. So we'll be developing the protocol further under the guidance of that team. One of the things that I'd love to see is people doing allocation programs using Signals, or even just like incentivizing their participants. So say, for example, one of the things that is baked into the Signals protocol is this concept of rewards. So a lot of the time people have incentivized participation by doing airdrops, but with Signals, what we can do for this priority board, we can, for example, say that, hey, we want to lock $1 million worth of governance tokens as reward for everyone who participates either via, you know, submitting an on-chain initiative, adding feedback, because all that information is recorded on-chain. We can actually distribute governance or protocol rewards to those people. And furthermore, we can also enhance the protocol. So for example, if someone leaves a positive comment or a negative comment, or we somehow amplify that, people are genuinely incentivized to provide high quality, high context inputs, because they have an on-chain mechanism that is trustless for them to be rewarded, which is super cool. And I think one of the sort of more abstract ideas that I'd love to see happen. So imagine you're a protocol, you are deployed on several different chains. Now, one of the sort of common narratives in the ecosystem, as more L2s or other ecosystems pop up that are EVM compatible, they offer grants to deploy. So imagine if you have a protocol and you said, okay, we're deployed on X L2s and there's a new L2 that's popping up, that L2 in theory can come in and trustlessly provide rewards for you to sort of bribe, you know, your protocol to deploy on them. So I think really exploring some of this, yeah, seeing this sort of cross-pollination, cross-chain sort of reward incentives would be a dream come true, you know, once we get it up.
I have to say, that's a really interesting use case, though, like, because even thinking of the bigger grand scheme of things, like, that's kind of sounds like the logical next step is to have that interoperability and to have chains cooperating with each other. So like if like seeing that in practice, I would love to see that in practice and seeing how it rolls out. But quite positive about it now that you say it. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, this is also coming from, I guess, our experience applying for, you know, ecosystem grants across the board. And it's quite tiresome. And I don't think anyone's gotten it right yet. Say, for example, there's also a way for us to invert the grant mechanism. So if we are a, you know, a legitimate company and we have work that needs to be done, and we can articulate, hey, we need like 10 grand to do this bit of work. In theory, any ecosystem fund could come in and be like, hey, that's cool. We'll fund that for you and commit to that trustlessly. So instead of having to go to a grant program and go through that entire application process, in theory, an ecosystem fund could have grant allocators and they could go around saying, hey, where do we want to allocate money for based on whatever initiative we have internally? And they can fund that trustlessly. So, I think it's a rich space, and I'm really excited to see how we can develop this further.
That would be a really interesting thing. Also from the aspect that of how to, at least how it is in my head, like there's so much information right now, like of how to have all that information, like practically narrowed down and funneled down so it can be eventually approved trustlessly. So to cut through the noise. And like solving that challenge, because I also think like one of the biggest, at least from my perspective, a pretty big challenge for a lot of companies when applying to grants is like, how do I find the right thing?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a huge space. So many people are doing great jobs exploring different ways to actually do this in a safe manner. But I guess from my perspective, I'm always looking at ways to bring more things on chain so we can bolster credibility, bolster reputation, because when that information is sort of locked off in any other system, we just don't have the information. It's asymmetric. We like grants programs don't know that you've applied for a grant here or you've received X amount of funding from other partners. Like in theory, when people are applying for grants, like there's a very real sort of case for like some projects get lots of funding, which is great. But then, you know, is there a moral clause to say that, okay, like that's kind of enough for the stage of the project you're at. We want to sort of try and disperse funds to other emerging projects. Like how do we solve these problems? And I think, you know, algorithms are obviously the way to go, but at the moment it is very much like a popularity contest. And, you know, when you are an emerging project, you don't necessarily have the network effects of a community to really help you along these processes. So I'm very much in favor of trying to create systems to just give smaller projects and emerging projects a better chance of showcasing themselves.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. I'm going to do a bit of a tangent over here on another article that you actually wrote, which I think you did an excellent explanation, like the three types of networks, like having like fixed mechanic networks with like Bitcoin, the governable parameter networks, and eventually autonomous networks. And I'd really love to touch on this, like how do you like with Signals, Lighthouse, and also how the voting psychology behind people, like how as people we are kind of stuck in our own ways. Where do you see the future of DAOs eventually evolving and on-chain governance eventually evolving, especially as you, right now you said like bringing more things on-chain to provide more people with more opportunities. So how do you see like maybe people's behavior evolving, adapting to that, and the future of on-chain organizations maybe rolling out in the near future? Because right now we're kind of in the middle of everything.
So just to recap that article, I guess it was just like a thought piece on how I had thought about the evolution of network economies. And I use, I think, the Kardashev scale as a means to sort of like distinguish, the various stages of network evolution. So the first one being Bitcoin, where, you know, Bitcoin is very well known, it has fixed parameters. We don't really adjust the parameters of the network often because that has trust implications. And then I guess where we are at now, we're in the sort of stage two type of evolution where we have these lovely protocols where we can adjust through on-chain governance or off-chain governance. And I think we are just going to be in this sort of phase for the next 3 to 5 years. We just don't have the data necessary to make, let's just say, autonomous decisions, which is what I sort of classify as type 3 networks. So right now, there's a lot of sort of narrative surrounding AI agents making decisions and doing things. But I would posit that, yeah, we just don't have the information. Like, it's very easy for agents to perform an action, but the real human aspect is, are they doing the correct thing? It's very easy to go with the supermajority. It's super difficult and rare to be contrarian and also be contrarian in a way that presents, I guess, a perspective that is not necessarily obvious. So I think we're a long way from achieving that ideal from an autonomous point of view. But how do we get there? We get there by having more data points on chain that are consumable that we can eventually train and, you know, give to these agents. But yeah, I think we're a long way from that at the moment.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. Like, really having and taking some decisions that are sometimes contrarian, because right now, what's from the information that we have to get to that autonomous level, it's practically just a cookie cutter approach. Still have some work to do.
Yeah, I think I'm just drawing from, I guess, my experience running governance. So, you know, for the most part, and again, this is not a critique on people's behavior. You know, sometimes the reason why some people may not feel that they want to participate in governance is they genuinely feel that they are not experts. But, and so they defer that to someone else who is an assumed expert. And to have someone speak out in a public space and, you know, at the risk of being ridiculed is actually a very sort of like a topical thing. And it's a challenging thing for most people. So, I think for the most part, when people make decisions in these environments, you know, even if you just look at forum chatter, it's like, oh, yes, I agree. Yes, I agree. But it's not necessarily, yes, I agree because, you know, why that's a good idea or not. So I think we have a ways to go in, I guess, trying to make better decisions together collectively. But again, I strongly believe that it all comes down to having the right information, making sure that users are aware. And one of the beautiful things is, like, you know, sometimes you can lay down some really complex stuff, but there are people out there in your communities who are more than willing, who will spend the time and effort and provide insights that are very different to your own, even when you're proposing it. So I genuinely do believe in the power of, you know, decentralized coordination, but that needs to be done with, like, the right dose of, like, transparency. Like, so say, for example, making decisions that are hugely complex, not giving your community the chance to sort of evaluate and do make decisions in their own time, you know, it's a real tough balance that we need to sort of strike.
Yeah, it's a really tough balance. And at the end, like, just as you said, like, having the right information, but also having the right tools to distribute that information and to give the right tools for the people to act on that information, which is also things that you're focusing with Lighthouse and Signals.
Yeah.
Arnold, is there any questions or any topics that you believe that we should have covered that I haven't asked you about yet, or we haven't dove deep enough?
No, I think we were talking about, like, a sort of a working title that so I'm working on a new essay, and as we have been developing Lighthouse and Signals, you know, many of the people have asked, oh, are you guys going to be doing a token, or, you know, how are we going to sort of incentivize people to use our products? And with that, obviously, with the territory comes, yep, you need a token. But one of, I guess, my personal issues with launching a token is that sometimes it's very hard to sort of outline real utility. And also when it comes to sort of the distribution, am I just launching a token for the sake of launching a token? Or, you know, the way my mind's wired, I was like, okay, how can we actually sort of like subvert the current way of doing things and actually explore how we can, you know, perhaps do more equitable token distributions? So, you know, one of the things that I was exploring in some of the papers that I was reading, people were commenting on how, with the majority of token allocations to date, at the token generation event, TGE, there is this very high concentration of power. And over time, there is a narrative that people talk about, like, okay, this is our path to decentralization. Now, how does that actually sort of play out in practice? Not very well, because the majority of certain allocations, they kind of have a very high Gini coefficient, or we don't necessarily see a sort of a more equitable, balanced way of how tokens are issued. Now, I'm not advocating that, you know, everything should be equal and fair, because in any sort of organization, there are always going to be experts, high context individuals that are needed to drive decision-making and progress forward, and they need to be appropriately rewarded. So, but when it comes to sort of like network incentives and how we can sort of leverage these new primitives, I was exploring this idea of epoch-based emissions. So what happens if we don't, at day zero, we don't say that we have a token supply of, I guess, 100 billion or whatever, and we don't necessarily work out how to distribute that after the fact. Epoch-based emissions is a way of, I guess, issuing tokens in small, narrow blocks so that the people who are involved in your community or your network, they are fairly rewarded based on their genuine participation. Now, in Lighthouse, you know, some of the things we've been exploring is, you know, the people who actually vote on our app, or the people who participate in signals, or our customers who actually use our tools. Since they are investing their time and effort and actually doing those on-chain interactions, they will actually have a say in what we call our product governance token. And when we were doing the modeling for this, and I'll link this to in the show notes, I'm probably going to be publishing this next week or so, we found that when we issue tokens in this sort of staggered amount, we found that the Gini coefficient is a lot lower, which means like more equitable distribution. And we have a metric that we've sort of been working on, which is like effective number of holders, which is there are more people who have a reasonable amount of tokens that can participate in decisions more equally. So,
curious on that point as well. So when it comes to like epoch-based releases of tokens, so right now, for example, let's say there's the governance token and everything. How does the so from what I understood over there is like, first you release one block of tokens to the people that are the most engaged, and then you gradually continue releasing blocks and blocks as more and more people get engaged.
Yes, exactly. And through that mechanism, I guess the research question in this essay is that, does that actually result in a more equitable distribution? So,
and how would that work, for example, for, because I can see that working for projects that already are have like a stable product and similar, but like when it comes to like solo founders, oftentimes it happens that they have to fund their work through the token.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, have you thought of that aspect, that, or it's just more focused on the organizational level?
I think it can be, you know, a solo founder is still like an enterprise, right? And I guess when I was, I guess, exploring this mechanism design, I'm just borrowing from what already exists. Like when you start up a new company, you're not issuing 10 million tokens or shares. As you achieve certain milestones, you have another founder. Cool, we're going to issue another share. You have two now. You know, we dilute. And that sort of like a way of dispersing equity in a company hasn't really been, I guess, modeled in crypto as well. And that's maybe because we have, you know, different incentives. But in terms of how we want to be, I guess, building out our product, we wanted to explore something a bit novel in terms of how can we distribute tokens in a different way that is tightly coupled to actual network interactions.
Got it. That's a very interesting and novel way of approaching the whole token, the entire token ecosystem, really, and kind of contrarian thinking to what is popular right now when you think
yeah.
about it.
Well, yeah, like if I was going to release a token, 10 billion or whatever, and go, oh, I'm going to, you know, airdrop it to my first 50 users or so, I mean, those 50 users are going to be disproportionately rewarded. And it's cool. Like, I appreciate that you are an early user, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to have good, stable growth at year two or three, right? So I guess why I'm looking at this through this lens is because we want to sort of incentivize people not only at, you know, year one, but year two, three, five. And if we look at and if we evaluate the majority of, I guess, token projects, and again, this is not necessarily applicable to like layer one blockchains or layer two. They have a different sort of value proposition and they have to think about things differently. But I'm talking about specifically ICO style projects who have an objective, they want to deliver something, and everything is so front loaded, not much care is given to how things operate a year two or three. And this is something I've experienced directly. And if we do want to create more sustainable, I guess, ecosystem or blockchain based projects, or build trust with our users again, that hey, this person who is going to have a huge amount of money allocated to them, and we choose, I mean, can we trust that we are going, they're going to manage that responsibly? I mean, unfortunately, I've experienced it firsthand that, you know, when the incentives don't match up, people do odd things. So I think we can cryptographically, again, deploy new ways to ensure that there is a balance or a tension between a person coming on board, taking risk, developing product, and then also sort of tapering it off so that they are so, they're not incentivized such that they will, you know, not complete the project as intended. So, yeah, these are some of the things that we're exploring. Hugely theoretical, but yeah.
And what do you think are the necessary infrastructure needed here to make this reality at this point?
I think we just need to have more experimentation into how projects can acquire capital, and specifically how we can sort of tightly integrate governance into the deployment of that capital. So we need to really move away from the idea of like, oh, this project raised 35 million on some ICO. I mean, how many times have we seen a project like that actually not necessarily follow through? So we just need to have better systems that are ideally governance systems that can be like, okay, cool, you've raised that money. Maybe you only get, don't know, 100,000 per month for your development costs that are communicated to your community. And then you can adjust that or ratchet it up or down as needed. So you have more trust, the community has more trust with the deployers of that, because at the end of the day, it is an agreement between the community and the people leading the program to do a good job to deliver on the promise of the mission.
It's really sweet, because it's actually quite a problem, especially for people that want to build something that lasts for years. Just as you said, mm-hmm. like, how do you know how much to allocate or how much will it be from the
start?
We don't.
No one knows. No, we don't. And this is a way for us to sort of work through that, using governance as a means to collectively sort of anchor down on, like, you know, what makes sense for that specific project. I mean, people outside of crypto think crypto is a joke and there is no trust with what we're doing. And we genuinely stand at an impasse, because if we don't self-regulate or create and start thinking about how we can do these things more effectively with more responsibility on how we deploy capital and how capital is used, well, we're never going to get out of this hump, I would say. So yeah. I think it's really important for more experimentation that specifically highlights how people or founders can be more accountable. Now, if you still want to go and do some weird meme coin and have no accountability, cool. Don't expect any weird outcome, right? That's why there is no accountability. Those people have no obligation to you. But if you're trying to deploy a legitimate project or protocol, I would encourage like founders to sort of think about how they can be more transparent and how they use funds, how to deploy capital, how it's used, and you know, communicating that transparently with the community as they move forward.
Yeah, so they really get it moving into fund the project for the long term. That's a one last question over there when it comes, especially like either EPUB based or in general when launching a token. Where should founders look first? Because, or where should, who should founders talk to? Because right now there's everything and nothing, if we see it from that perspective.
So I don't fully understand the question. So what do you mean by who should founders talk to?
Because for example, like you speak about this transparency aspect and being more transparent with the community and like exploring different ways of tokenization, like tokenomics, pardon me. So and like releasing tokens and similar. Right now, there's so much conflicting information about you should do this or you should do that. It's kind of hard for founders to decide what even to do in the end. And they just fall into the same buckets that previous founders have fallen into.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough question. I think as a founder myself, one of the sort of strategies I've deployed is to really try and articulate everything that we're doing. We have clear documentation. We write articles about all the different initiatives that we're exploring. We've doxed ourselves. We've also got, I guess, documentation in regards to grants that we've applied for, because, you know, even in the space we're in now, we're an emerging project. We've had people come to us and say, hey, you've applied for multiple grants, but, you know, why are you applying for more? And, you know, I think it's important to sort of surface that, hey, you know, we are doing things to maybe facilitate one small part of the product, and you know, applying for grants is just one of the many tactics that we need to deploy in order to continue on our mission and build trust with the community. So yeah, I think it's just use the tools that are available. I like to use like Mirror, or I mean tools that are like locked on the blockchain, so people have that resilience. And as we get, I guess, more protocolized in the sense of like potentially launching a product token, you know, we'll be deploying all our announcements via Lighthouse. We'll also be looking to explore how we can actually have those announcements encoded on chain. So that's actually one aspect that I've never really talked about. So one of the interesting things about the crypto space is that you can spin up a project with an anonymous Twitter account and put out a bunch of information, and then there's that beautiful delete account button. So people have, you know, made a lot of promises to a community with certain expectations, but then, oop, delete. I never said that. And, well, how can we just move away from that? So I think one of the things that we will be exploring at Lighthouse is that when you do make announcements or deploy announcements via our system to your constituents, that will also be encoded on-chain. So you can build that layer of trust. And it all comes down to building that incremental level of trust with your constituents.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. Arnold, a really amazing conversation. Thank you for sharing all these insights. And
thanks for having me, Chris. Yeah, I'll happily link, I guess, some of the articles that I've been writing. It's been interesting. I didn't necessarily come in to write or rewrite all these different sort of ideologies. But, you know, I came in with the intention of, hey, I just want to build a crypto project and I want to use a DAO. But as the years progressed, I just started like peeling back the layers, and there's so many things we need to solve. But this is not a negative thing. It's actually a really positive, because the industry and the territory is really ripe for innovation. Nothing is concrete. Nothing is absolute. And, you know, just like there are so many different ways and businesses that exist in the real world, I imagine that there will be similar and if not more ways, you know, we're going to be sort of using power of blockchain technology and governance to, you know, create new businesses. So really looking forward to the future we have.
Exactly. And it's like there's so many novel ways that actually it's like a creative playground. So the more you play, the better it is and the more fun it is.
Indeed. I mean, yeah, we're really looking excited to deploy Signals. We have been in talks with some of the larger DAOs, but can't say yet. But yeah, once we get that to a production state, have that audited, I'm really looking forward to sort of exploring and just seeing how this could potentially work. Yeah, exciting times.
Exciting times. Thank you, Arnold.